Exploring the importance of having the right skills to succeed. This is Skillfully Speaking, supported by Babcock International. Presented by Skills Ambassador Jackie Grubb.
Welcome to Skillfully Speaking. Today I'm joined by Marcus Skeet, better known as the Hull Boy. Through storytelling, running challenges and advocacy, Marcus celebrates York's working class culture, challenges stereotypes and inspires others to push their limits. Let's explore the skills behind his creative and physical journey. Hi, Marcus.
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. Very surreal. It's very professional in here.
Well, it's great to have you. You've taken a long journey from Hull, haven't you, to get here?
Yeah. It was 7 hours, but it was nice and scenic, to be fair. We got to go along the coast, Totnes. It was nice. Not like other journeys.
And we've seen and we've met each other before because you've been sharing some of your inspiration to lots of our community in Plymouth of recent times.
So. Oh, yeah, that was a brilliant day. Really enjoyed that. A lovely community here and a brilliant place as well. Plymouth is beautiful, especially in the summertime. Want to take the family 100%.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm so excited to talk to you today. And gosh, where do we start, really? Where do we start with you? I have this that health and well-being is at the forefront of anything that we do.
Yeah.
And, you know, in discussion with lots of people, if we don't have our health, what do we have? So can you just introduce yourself? What are you about?
What am I about? Well, my name's Marcus. I'm 17. I'm from a little town called Moulton near York. And I run to raise awareness and money for mental health and the Mind Charity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very big on mental health and opening up. I feel like, especially at our age, as people under 18, there's a big stigma still around speaking out.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in big groups, people don't tend to talk to their friends about what's going on, and we see that with suicide statistics. And my aim now is just to try and get the word out, try and show people my age and every age really that it's okay not to be okay, but the main thing is it's the best thing to do is to speak out and talk about our emotions. And that's why I think I do these run-ins, to push myself to the limits but also give people a chance to show that even in a body which isn't six-pack and massive biceps or whatever, you can still go and you can do running challenges and do things which people doubt you on.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, isn't it? Because the landscape has changed so much in society with social media, with perfectionism and all sorts of things. The pressure on people is just immense, isn't it?
Yeah.
So really, that's probably one of the first questions that I want to ask you.
Yeah.
Confidence is such a big thing, isn't it?
100%.
And you've got now this following of the Hull Boy and your storytelling is just immense, and the impact already that that's having on people, not just young people, parents, colleagues, communities and as like, is really, really powerful. So how did you find the confidence to become the Hull Boy, and where did the art come from this brilliant storytelling?
The Hull Boy, the name, I'm actually from York, so
I
used to do Hull City YouTube videos. I'm a big Hull City fan, so that's where the name the Hull Boy comes from. But in terms about speaking about my mental health, I was suffering. It was April last year, so about a year ago, and I realised that I had a bit of an audience at the time. I had about 10,000 subscribers on YouTube, and I wanted to talk to them about what was truly going on. I put on a big face and tried to be really happy on camera, whereas when I'd put the video out, I was probably in one of the worst headspaces of my life. And I felt like it was a big jump to first open up about my mental health. Now I can talk to anyone about what's happened in the past and what's going on, but at the time it was still a big stigma and I still believed in that stigma and it was very tough. But I think that first video really opened my eyes that opening up has helped so many other people. And I feel like if one person opens up, that allows the door to two or three more people. And as I always say, if before I die, I can save one person's life, I think that was a life worth living. And I'm very grateful to have this platform and talk about mental health, because you see a lot of silly stuff on social media. So it's good to use a platform for things that are actual meaningful instead of just random things.
And confidence is such a big thing, isn't it? And feeling empowered and feeling brave to actually share your emotions and share your feelings. And opening up, there's lots of research to say sharing a problem, talking about problems is really, really good for our mental health. You read about putting people in different situations so that they can share stories and things, like going for walks and walking alongside people instead of actually looking at somebody in the eye, because 100%. The confidence around sharing something that's really personal is huge.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of storytelling. Yeah. And actually, when you're telling a story about something that's personal to you, that's a whole lot easier, isn't it? So how do you find the power through storytelling? How does that work for you? How does that make you feel?
Talking about my past and my story helps a lot, because I feel a lot of people can relate. Suicide and having them thoughts, unfortunately, is quite common around people every age. And, you know, a lot of people say men's mental health matters. I think everyone's mental health matters.
Absolutely.
I mean, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, what you do as a job, anyone in this world can suffer. And I feel like talking about my story and showing people who may be able to relate, if they can relate and take that step and opening up like I have done, maybe that'll help them. And I feel like storytelling is so important, because it's all good opening up saying you struggle, but if you give a bit of backstory, you tell people what's happened and show people that it can get better, then that is so important. And don't get me wrong, mental health is always going to stick around. It isn't something that can go away with a tablet or go away with one conversation, but it certainly can be improved. And to be fair, I'm probably in the best headspace I've been in for a lot of months now. But, you know, it probably will come back at some point, but it's just about dealing with that and opening up and remembering about my story and that how much it's improved over the last 2 or 3 years now that I can finally, like, sit down and open up about it.
Also, purpose is a real thing in terms of, if we don't have purpose in life, what are we driving towards?
Yeah.
And in your health journey, you started running.
Yes.
So there was something purposeful to support you in for you to feeling better about yourself and feeling healthier. So tell us a bit, how did you start running?
Well, the story isn't really bubbly, but it's March last year. So coming up to a year, I wasn't in a good headspace at all. I went for a walk one day, and I'm not going to say I went out to go and hurt myself, but I was in a very bad place, and that walk really saved my life. And I feel like, well, I took a back lane into the countryside, and I just remember stopping there. I had my music in, and I just looked out, and I just thought, this is beautiful. And I realized that walk saved my life. So every day in the morning, I went for a walk, and it went longer walks. And then I thought, you know what, I really want to test myself. So I went for a little jog, and I went 200 metres down the street. I kid you not, I stopped and I went for a takeaway, and that's a true story. But honestly, it was just the feeling about pushing myself, and running is so beautiful for the head. And so I gradually picked it up from a little jog to, I set myself a challenge of running a mile a day every day in April last year. And it was really tough for me. A lot of people can run like marathons, but at that point I just wanted to get out there and run, and it didn't matter about the distance, it was just the consistency and the discipline of getting out there. And that month really helped my head. Obviously, posting it on social media was brilliant. I met some fantastic people, we got thousands of followers, but for me it was all about the feeling after that run when you'd finished it, and you know you were done for the day, but it also, I've achieved that run.
Yeah.
And it was so beautiful. And then since then, I've just found the love of running, and yeah, now I do daft things, but we enjoy it, and that's the main thing.
Yeah. And there's something about that, isn't there? Because I think there's a lot of pressure in society that we have to be perfect at something straight away, and that we have to be good at it. And if we want to start running, that we're able to run 5 miles and, and everything's great. But there is something about, even if it's as soon as you wake up in the morning and you get out in that fresh air, you get out in nature, you get out and see the light before you even do anything else. That is free, for one thing, isn't
it? Yeah, 100%.
But actually, just getting outside the front door and going for a short walk is better than nothing at all, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and then building that up into something else.
Yeah.
So you started off just going for a short walk.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love the takeaway bit. And actually, that is life, isn't it?
It's a joke.
You know,
it was a nice pizza. Walk,
exactly. And that was a stepping stone to something else. So you started from zero.
Mm-hmm.
You started with short walks, longer walks, and then got into running.
Mm-hmm.
So where are you today then in terms of your mission, in terms of that health, that exercise and your running regime?
Yeah, well, I know this won't be released till after I've announced it, but tomorrow I'm announcing my new challenge. So a world record challenge to become the youngest person ever and the first under 18 to run the full length of the UK.
Wow.
So it's about 1,300 miles around a marathon every day for 50 days, starting at Land's End and running all the way to John O'Groats at the top of Scotland, starting a month tomorrow, which is quite scary to think about. But I chose that because it was exactly a year from when I began a mile a day. And I feel like saying, in a space of a year, I've gone from a mile to the full length of the UK. It's quite fun to say, so we'll go with that. I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be tough for my body, but I love setting these challenges because it doesn't seem possible, but I feel like once you set your mind to something and you believe you can do it, as you said, confidence is key. Obviously, you don't want to have a massive ego, but I want to be able to try and do this challenge, not just for me, but for mental health. I'm partnering with the Mind Charity, and the lovely people at Gymshark have sponsored the challenge. So I'm just very grateful to get out there and start running and hopefully raise as much awareness of mental health as I can.
And the real point that you're making is that we all start from somewhere, don't
100%.
We?
100%.
So building up is really important, and that's okay too, isn't it?
Yeah. It doesn't matter if you do a mile or 100 miles, you're doing something. And I like to say that the race is won when you put your shoes on. You see a lot of people out there trying to better themselves, and it doesn't matter what stage someone's at. If they're doing something to improve themselves or doing something to help their mental health, that is so important. And that's why I'm big on never judging anyone, because you never know what someone's going through.
Exactly.
You see a lot of people at the gym doing daft exercises, but you don't know what they're training for.
No. Nope.
You don't know what that person's gone through. You know, you see someone on the treadmill struggling with 2 minutes, but you don't know what it's done for them to get to the gym, how much it's taken strength-wise for them just to get out of bed. And that's one thing which is huge, is everyone starts somewhere, but everyone can do brilliant things if you put your mind to it. Mm. I truly believe that.
Yeah. And you're now really confident in the goals that you're achieving, and whether it's supporting a charity that's helped you, whether it's supporting your own health, or it's supporting young people as you leading by example, all those listeners out there, how would you advise them to pursue their own goals?
I'd say just believe. I think something which is so big is believing in yourself and believing in your goals. I always like to set little goals and big goals. For me, just a little goal for the week is maybe just get out of bed every day or go for a run. And setting yourself short-term goals, but also long-term goals, is so beautiful. And the thing I like to say is every tunnel has a light at the end. And you hear that so much, but if it didn't, it'd be a one-way street. Every tunnel does have a light at the end, and every road is different. You know, everyone's got a different path in life, but some people's it's smooth sailing. You can walk through that tunnel and you can achieve what you want to achieve. But I like to say the hardest and the most deserving things take time, and there is going to be bumps in the way, but everyone's goals are different. But I truly believe if you put your mind to it, you can achieve it.
Mm.
And it doesn't matter what it is. It'll take time, but good things take time. And to anyone who's watching, just believe you can do it.
Mm.
I truly mean that.
That's wonderful. So you talked about bumps on the way.
Yeah.
So we all have our goals, we all have our purpose, and nobody's life is perfect, is it? And whoever we are, we all have bumps. So what would you advise when those bumps happen to keep focused, to make sure that they get out of those bumps back on track?
Well, there's always going to be knockdowns, but the knockdown is not as big as the comeback. I like to say that. In the first Rocky film, there's a scene where Rocky gets knocked out. This is relevant, by the way. I'm just talking about a film. But he gets knocked down and everyone in the crowd didn't believe in him. The coach didn't believe him in. The person that he was fighting, Adonis Creed, he turned his back and he thought he'd won the fight.
Mm.
But against all odds, he got back up. And you saw that in real life with Tyson Fury, and you've seen that with so many other people, is that people don't believe in them. They hit a road bump and it feels like it's the end of the world, but they got back up and they made something out of it. And a bump could last 5 minutes, 2 days, a year, but it is possible to get better. And a bump could be really small, it could be really minor, it could be massive, but it does get better. It's just about believing that it does get better, and having that mindset. I think mindset and your mind is so key to everything. I've realised the last few months now is if you want to get better, you have to believe you want to get better.
Yeah.
Because you can't just sit here and dwell on things, because life is very short. We only get like 70 years and half of that we're sleeping. So it's good to make the most of everything we've got and just to believe it will get better. And it will. I do believe that no matter what someone's going through, there is always a light at the end of the tunnel. You turn that corner, there will be something there waiting for you. And I believe that 100%.
Can you give us some examples of when things haven't gone as planned?
Yeah.
And how you've got through those and how you've been able to make things better?
Yeah, well, recently, this is going to sound really weird. I went on a date, my first ever date, right? I brought the girl flowers and I put it on social media. And I turned my phone off. I just put first ever date, very nervous, wish us luck. Just to my friends, as a joke. And when I got home, it got 130 million views.
Oh, I love that.
And it was brilliant in that matter. But at that point, I got a lot of hate from that. The date didn't go very well. My sponsor pulled out for the mission. And I thought, you know what? I feel like everything's just gone so weirdly. After a fantastic few months, I felt like I couldn't feel down about it. But I was. I felt like I'd hit rock bottom again. I felt like all the running and all the progress had been stopped because of the sponsor. I felt like everyone hated me on social media, but it was all a mindset thing. And I just realised now that the people who hate on social media, and I think it plays a big thing into especially college people, is social media is a brilliant place, but it also it isn't real. Like, you're going to get hate no matter what you do. You do something good, you'll get hate. You do something bad, you'll get hate. Something is always going to happen on social media. Everyone's going to have an opinion, and that's the problem. But it's good to realise that there's life outside of social media. I do a lot on social media, and that's technically my job. But the real people are your family, your friends, those who matter in life. And remember that their opinions are worth 1,000 times more than what user486 says on Twitter, because they're not going to see you in real life. They're not going to be there for you when you're at your lowest. And as you said about my speed bumps, I've picked myself back up.
Mm.
We've got the sponsor sorted. I'm going to be attempting this running challenge. And you don't need a relationship to be happy. I'm just happy in myself. I'll just bring myself flowers. It don't really matter. We're all good.
Thank you for sharing something so personal.
Yeah.
Because I should imagine so many people can relate to that.
Yeah.
Your reflection now, do you think that you shouldn't have put that first date on social media? Is that your learning from it?
No, I'm going to say that I'm happy that I put it on there.
Okay.
Because I got a lot of lovely comments. I got a lot of really nice messages. And obviously, I did take the hateful ones to heart. But so much more positives came out of that.
Yeah.
And like some of the experiences I got because of that was mental. I mean, someone saw that post and invited me to go and play darts in front of 5,000 people the other day. And like, yeah, you're going to get hate. But I feel like anything social media wise, if you're getting numbers or people see you happy, they're going to try and bring you down. But no one better than you or doing something is going to hate on you. No one's going to take time out of the day who's got something actually going for them. You know what I mean? The people who hate are people who want to tear you down and, to be honest, try and get clicks for themselves. And that's the problem with social media. But I don't regret
it. So the fact is, you use that as an example of something not going how you thought it was going to go. So there was no regrets of you sharing your personal dating on social media.
Yeah.
It was, for fact, the learning of something that came along that you weren't expecting and what you've learned then to move things forward. So picking up on social media then, and you've already said quite a lot, because social media is so much, isn't it? And as you said,
100%.
There is so much good about it, but also you hear and you read so much that goes wrong with it, and you've just given a really, really good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
So is there any more advice that you can give in terms of how you use social media? Mm-hmm. Any other stories of advice?
Well, social media is beautiful. I do stand by that. I think you can do so much good with it, but it's just about being careful, especially people under 18 just need to be careful, because social media, whatever you put on there, is there for the rest of your life. And that is very scary.
That's a good point, isn't it?
Yeah. So now in 40 years, if I go for a job, they're going to know about my flowers.
Yeah. So, what sort of flowers were they, by the way?
They were roses.
Oh.
They were quite nice, to be fair. I got them from Morrison's. I was loving it. But no, with social media, I think it can be used very positively, but it's just about finding the right thing. And also, don't get too addicted. I feel like a few months ago, I was addicted to my phone. And it sounds so daft, but like, you wake up in the morning, first thing you do is you go on your phone. Any 5 minutes you got, you go on your phone, you check your messages. So I just put my phone on Do Not Disturb for a bit.
Okay.
And I feel like just taking a break away from it or having restrictions is good because it does clutter your mind. Mm-hmm. And I feel like social media is beautiful, but also be careful. Yeah. And what you post is going to be there for the rest of your life. But also, I'm not saying don't post, because there's a lot of people that have so many beautiful ideas, but they're scared to make that first step of posting.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think there was a streamer in USA,
yeah,
and he streamed to his dad for a year straight, and like no one else watched him apart from his dad. And he just made that consistent discipline of just going and posting and streaming hours and hours a day. And now he's the most followed streamer in the world. And it just shows that it might not be the first post, it might not be the 100th post, but if you stay consistent and you believe in what you're doing, then go and do it and it will work out. You know, just if people have got an idea, just go and post it. Who cares what people think? Social media, you can turn your phone off. Yeah, you might see some hate on social media, but you turn your phone off, you're not going to see that hate, are you? So right, just post it, turn your phone off and crack on with your day.
Good tip.
If you want to build on your skills and get yourself on the right path to success, visit the City College Plymouth website, cityplym.ac.uk. You can hook up with courses, download information packs, guides, and much more. Or find us on social media. We're Skillfully Speaking Podcast on Instagram and Skillfully Speaking on Facebook and LinkedIn. Skillfully Speaking, where hidden skills are revealed. Now back to the conversation.
Any more tips on keeping safe on social media?
Yeah, don't answer weird messages from people. Mm-hmm. It sounds so daft, but that's the truth. Keeping safe. If you're not wanting to do social media as a job or want to post content, and you're just posting you or your friends, have a private account, just accept your friends, because there is a lot of strange people on social media, because anyone can have access to it.
Yeah.
And like, that's the thing. I post a lot of daft things, I mean, me going on a date, but you know, I try and keep my personal life off it. Like, I have a private Instagram now, just because I feel like if you post things as a content creator, it's there for everyone to see. And it's very important that you don't put your address, you don't put whereabouts you're from. Even things like your full name can be very scary, because two clicks of a button now on social media, you can find out so much about people. And that's the scary thing, is social media is a brilliant way there, but then you've got AI and all of that, the other path. And that's like terrifying to think about. Just stay safe, I say that is really important. Have a private account and make sure to only follow people you trust, I think.
Yeah. Where society is now, many, many years ago, people didn't move around for their jobs. People had closer communities.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there is a sense that people want a belonging, and trying to get belonging through social media, you're saying, is probably not the right thing to do. So how do you get a sense of belonging? You've already talked about your friends and your family, but all these people that are really going to be interested in listening to you, how do they create their belonging?
Well, I'll be honest, a few months ago, I tried to do everything for social media and I felt like they were my friends on there.
Yeah.
But I realise now that the true people are the ones you see every day. Yeah. You walk down the street and they smile at you and ask how you are. And I get a sense of belonging just by, to be fair, talking to people who haven't got a blooming clue what I do. And it's so brilliant. Like, if I'm going down the street and I just see this old woman or man and we're just having a chat about things, and like, I don't say I do social media, I'm not like famous, but like, just speaking to people who don't have a clue what social media is, I love that. I get a sense of belonging from that, just because like, I'm just happy, they're happy, everyone's happy. It's like my grandma and granddad, they don't have a clue what I do, they're just happy, they know I run a bit. And I think that's a beautiful thing. Going on to quickly social media again, it's like, our grandparents, our great grandparents lived a beautiful life without it, and it shows you can live without it. It's like, especially in terms of romance, it's like social media can be very toxic. It's like my grandparents weren't checking each other's following or reposts or what they were messaging each other. It's a very weird place. But I think finding a belonging outside of social media is very important. Yeah. Obviously, I've got so many close friends that I've made from social media, and like friends for life. And I'm so grateful for them. And I'm so grateful for the opportunities I've had. Like, even just coming here today, it means so much to me. Just getting to speak in front of these cameras, It's a bit mad. But yeah, I have the Hull boy and I have Marcus, and
yeah,
it's two different lives.
And your grandparents just look at you as Marcus.
Yeah.
And that is
that's
it.
The beauty of it.
And that puts you right back into reality, and 100%. That just keeps your heart happy.
Yeah. I mean, it's just nice to know that there is people out there that care for you. And I think there's a lot of people that have different situations going on, but I guarantee you, one person out there, at minimum, one person cares about you.
Mm.
And that person can save your life. And there is a community that cares. And if you are struggling, please reach out. Because even if it's not people you know, just talking to a teacher, a colleague, you know, even an anonymous page, it can help you so, so much. And there is light at the end of the tunnel.
And there is so much advice out there at 100%. The moment, isn't there?
That's why social media is brilliant as well.
Yeah. So you've talked about colleagues, you've talked about teachers, you've talked about people around you.
Yeah.
You've already touched on Mind as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I love Mind to bits. Yeah. They saved my life, I'll be honest. So my dad suffered with mental health when he was younger. He suffered with depression and anxiety, which due to that, he was on medication and he was very bad with his depression and drank a lot, and that led to him now having dementia. And Mind have always been there for my dad, and they've always been there for me. And yeah, when I started my mile a day, I aimed to raise, I think it was like £500 for the Mind charity, and it raised £25,000, which was unbelievable. And
yeah.
I remember getting a message, and it's a funny story, I was in Plymouth when I got this message. I was here for Hull versus Plymouth at the end of last season in the
state. Oh, were you at Argyle?
Yeah. We lost.
Yay! Oh, sorry.
No. I remember getting a message from the CEO of Mind. I was sat in a farm in Plymouth. I was stroking a goat at the time.
Oh.
And I remember getting a phone call from someone, and it was the CEO of Mind. And we just kept talking. And the last few months, we've been working behind the scenes. And I'm so grateful to say now that I'm a partner of Mind, which is so, so mad to say. But they've helped so much, and there was no other charity I wanted to choose, because when I wasn't raising money for them, they helped me out of their pure goodness and out of their heart. And they're such an incredible charity, and what they do for people who suffer, for people who have family members that suffer, and just people out there who may be feeling a bit down, they're always there, and they do it purely because they want to. They're not doing it for money. They're doing it because they believe in that. And that's what I'm big on, is if people believe in the process and people believe in you, then go for it.
How do people reach out to Mind then, Marcus?
Mind have a website. They've got, I think there's a phone number out there, and they've got so many social media platforms, and they reply to every single message. And you give them a message, they will reply to you. You give them a phone call, they're going to be there for you. And what Mind do is they put you in contact to local Mind things. And there's always a Mind local. I think, like, there's a Mind every 5 miles or something like that. There's always somewhere. And if there isn't, there'll be Andy's Man Club. There'll be so many different places, because that's the beauty of it now, is there's so many places you can go and speak to. And I'm very grateful to those that dedicate their time to go and lead these places. And, yeah, Mind, give them a message. There's always somewhere you can go. Even if it's not Mind, there is always somewhere for your mental health and somewhere where you will feel valued and part of a community, which is something that's helped my mental health, is when you feel belonging to a community. It is so beautiful and
so
grateful.
You've talked about that health and mental health is important to everybody, but obviously your passion for male mental health.
Yeah.
What is different about male mental health, and what advice can you give to the males of this world?
Well, as I said to you, I believe everyone's mental health matters.
Yeah.
There is a big stigma about men as well. I don't think it's because of anything in particular, but I think it's mainly because some males think it's weak to suffer. And I think that's where the big stigma comes about, not because people don't see men's mental health as something important, but more the fact that people don't want to speak out, because you see this real tough guy going to the gym with a massive smile on his face. If you see him suffering, he might think that people will think less of him and he doesn't want to speak. But I think it's so important, everyone, not just men, but just to speak out. And that's the first big step.
Yep.
Is even if it's to your friends. And I like to say, if you open up to your friends and they laugh, then they're not true friends. Because a true friend, no matter what, even if it's like a friend where you have a good laugh with them. I mean, you know, college kids, some of the conversations they have are, but yeah. But even if that's all you talk about, if you open up to that person, a true friend will be there for you. And yeah, I think opening up, even if it's not to a friend, but to someone, is the first big step. Just getting it off your chest.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time, we don't know why we suffer. It's like there was a stage where nothing was going wrong. Like everything was all right in terms of my life, in terms of social media, but I still felt something in here and I didn't understand why, because I didn't know whether it was an illness, but it wasn't. It was just mental health, and it can affect you at any point, at any stage in your life. And it's so important just to get out there and talk about it. It doesn't matter who to.
Yeah.
Mental health is so important because everyone suffers with it. You know, a lot of people say they won't, but I think it does affect everybody at some stage of their life, because it just does.
Yeah.
And we just need to get that stigma in the bin.
Yeah.
And we just need to talk about it. I'm very open about it. If I'm suffering, I'll tell someone. I'll tell my mum, I'll tell my dad. I'm very grateful that my family aren't old-fashioned in the sense where they don't believe in mental health. I'm very grateful that they're always there for me. And even if you do have families, because there's a lot of families still and people are scared to open up to their parents or grandparents because they're scared that they don't believe in it. Mental health is a big thing, and I can guarantee you that your family probably has suffered and they just don't talk about it. I saw something the other day and it was like the soldiers in the World War, they went through PTSD with everything that happened. And at that point, they just put it to a side because they didn't believe in mental health and the amount of suicides and things that happened because of that. But now we're in a place where it's good to talk.
So if I bring us back to today then and
yes,
here and now,
yes,
I'm intrigued now. So you're going to be training for this mammoth from Land's End to John O'Groats.
Yeah.
Tell me what's going in your body at the moment then. What are you eating? What are you drinking?
Do you know, it's quite mad, but I'm on a diet still. So I'm 32 kilograms down. I've lost about 15 kilograms since I last saw you, which is
wow,
a bit mad to think about. But it's a weird one because when I run, if I do a marathon, I burn like 7,000-8,000 calories. So I could potentially eat three pizzas and I'd still lose a bit of weight. But I like to keep what I eat clean. And it's a weird one. I'm not like eating loads. Obviously, I need to. And for this challenge, so I did 20 miles every day for a week, I think about 2 or 3 weeks ago. And that was such a weird one because it was just testing the waters to see if I could do it. I did it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I can go and try and do this challenge. But like when you run that amount, your body doesn't want to eat. It just wants to go to bed. It just shuts down.
Hmm.
Whereas like for this challenge, if it's 50, 60 days long, I need to eat and I need to make sure it's properly fueled. But I'm going to have a support team with me and hopefully they can help with it. But at the moment,
talk about the 80-20 rule.
So yeah,
you tell me what a typical day's food is for you then while you're training.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, so I don't like to eat loads of like processed chemicals and all that jazz. Not that I'm against it, but usually in the morning I'll wake up, I like to have eggs, maybe have some scrambled egg on toast.
Mm-hmm.
Dinner, usually it's some sort of wrap, whether it's chicken, beef, something protein. I'm very big on protein. Then I'll go to the gym, we'll have a gym session. I usually have a protein shake after that to get all my like minerals and all that jazz in.
Yep.
And then for tea, at the moment, what I'm trying to do is I'll have a meat or a source of protein, and then I'll have veg and probably some sort of like a small bit of carbs. I can't cut out carbs. I think it's so important for your running. A lot of people do it to lose weight, but it is important. But my food's quite boring. I love a bit of everything, as you can tell. I love a bit of everything, mate. But
it's about balance, isn't it?
Yeah. You can't just starve yourself, especially with eating disorders out there. I used to really struggle with my eating, and I lost loads of weight once, and I crashed diet, and I didn't touch chocolate or anything for months. But now I like to say if I have a takeaway once every 2 weeks or something like that, and then I can look forward to it. But it's also, I'm not scared to eat it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like once you get so obsessed with your diet and obsessed with something, that anything that breaks that formula or you think breaks it can really damage your mind. So I try and eat. I'll have a bit of chocolate here and there. Mm-hmm. It might not make my weight loss go as quick, but at least I'm happy. What's that Paddy the Baddy quote? I'd rather eat what I want and be happy than starve myself and feel like I need to fit in, which is a big thing, especially in college. People are just trying to fit in, trying to look at what they want, but people aren't going to judge you for your looks. True people aren't going to judge you for that. They're going to judge you for you and your personality and, I suppose, what you want to do in life.
And it goes back to putting that balance in things.
Yeah.
I mean, at the beginning, we talked about your journey started off with a short walk.
Yeah.
Then in terms of society and the pressure on perfectionism and the way that we look and even down to what we eat, So what you're saying is it's about balance. So it's making sure that you get your vitamins and minerals.
Yeah.
Because we do live in a world of fast food, don't we? It's so easy. I mean, to click a button and just get anything at any time, isn't it?
That is quite scary to think about. I can imagine the first time my grandparents got fast food, you know, when they go to a restaurant and they get like dinner plates and everything and they just give it to them in a bag here. And it's like, yeah, that is mental. And the good thing is now is there's so much supplements and things you can get online, but I don't like to trust all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like once you go down that rabbit hole of taking tablets before every meal and trying to get these vitamins in, I feel like you just get a bit too obsessed with it and spending loads of money on it. I take my tablets that I need to, which is my antidepressants, which help my OCD. I take two for gallstones. I don't even know what they are, but I've got them. And then I take one for my diabetes, which is gone now. Well, it's in remission, whatever that means. It's not here anymore, but it's just to make sure that it stays like that. But I don't like to take supplements. But the world is quite mad. You can literally order whatever you want and it's there the next day. It's when you put it like that, the world is crazy.
You're quite open about your OCD.
Yeah.
And there's a lot in the media now about neurodiversity and neurodivergence.
Yeah.
Any advice?
With my OCD, I used to always think it was really daft, which sounds daft itself, but it was little things like if I was leaving a room, I had to touch the inside of the room and outside like 30 times, think of the right thing. And when I tried to explain that to people, they're like, why? You know what I mean? And it's like when you explain the symptoms and what you have to do, it sounds so silly. And you're like, nothing bad's going to happen if I leave that room. But to us, it does. And it's not just about snapping out of it. It's our body. And like, if I don't do something right, I start feeling sick. I get shivering. And it's nothing I can control. It's something that's there. But the one thing I like to say is it does get better. There was a stage, and I don't really talk about it often. I think I've mentioned it once before in a podcast. But I was in my room for a year straight. Like I locked myself in there because my OCD was that bad. I'm very grateful to my mum because she used to give me food. She used to like get everything sorted for me. And I'd just stay in my bed because I felt if I got out, if I said certain things, you know, bad things would happen. Obviously, it wouldn't have done. But there was a point where I didn't cut my nails. I didn't cut my hair because I was scared. And this is going to sound really daft. If I cut my nails, someone wouldn't like me. That's not going to happen. And now I know that. But at that point, that's what I thought. And now I'm on tablets. I'm trying to wean myself off them now. We're trying to cut down. The doctors say that I don't need it as much now because I feel like now I just realise that nothing bad is going to happen. It's always a mind game, but it's not daft to suffer with things like that. It is such a big thing. And when I came here last time, I met a girl called Alex and she is incredible. And she has the same thing that I've got. And that's the first time I've ever met someone with the same OCD symptoms as me. And I saw her last night, lovely, lovely person. It's just great to connect over things like that. But it just goes to show that people do have these things. And if you're going through something, it doesn't have to be OCD. If something's playing up in your mind, I guarantee you there'll be millions of people out there going through the same thing. And it's just about speaking out, which it goes back to speaking out because it's like with depression. I'm sure the first person who felt really, really, really down and like opened up about it realised that the five people he was opening up and about was probably going through the same thing. And that's it. It's just opening up, talking about it, and the community will welcome you. That sounds like it's a cult. Do you know what I mean? Like, the whole world is so welcoming. Not the whole world, but a lot of the world is welcoming. And I'm sure you talk to anyone, even if it's a stranger down the street, they will give you time, especially where we live. Like, I live in the countryside, and I suppose Plymouth, is it a city?
It's a city.
It is.
It's an ocean city.
But it's not like London. And I feel like everyone here is welcoming. Everyone in Plymouth is lovely. Everyone in Devon's just happy. Mm. I love Devon. I love Cornwall. Just everyone with goats and sheep. Oh, it's brilliant. I love it. But everyone's happy and everyone's welcoming. And with the OCD thing, people do have it. And, you know, you're never alone in the battle.
So, Marcus, you've been so open with your personal stories that we're really grateful for. So just bring us back to where you are today and just remind us now of this challenge and this goal that you're doing.
I'm going to be attempting to run the full length of the UK, 1,300 miles, 50 miles, 20 miles every day for maybe about 60 days, probably even more than 20 miles every day. So the bottom of England to the top of Scotland, all in aid to raise awareness of mental health, because I think it's so important to raise money for the Mind Charity. I'll be setting up a GoFundMe probably tomorrow afternoon. Yeah, announcing it tomorrow. It's been a long time coming. A world record attempt to be the youngest person ever. So if we can do it, I can, as they say, create stories for the grandchildren and tell people for the rest of their life that I was the youngest person to do it. And I suppose the youngest person can be beaten, but I'll be the first under 18, the first child to ever do it, and that can't be beaten. So that I'm looking forward to. And then after that, I want to run it backwards in flip-flops, because why not? It's fun.
So what's your legacy?
To be fair, when I die, I don't want people to remember me. I just want people to remember the words and the awareness for mental health, I suppose. Obviously, these running challenges are mad, and I need to like get as many in as possible, because like, you can't just run around the world when you're 80. You need to...
You could.
I'm just thinking about that now. I don't think I'll be getting my grandma out anytime soon to run a marathon, but I feel like I want to run as much. And even if it's like little things that haven't been done before, I just want to do things to show that you can do things. And I just want to show that no matter what situation you're in, it can get better. Like, even if we go back to exactly a year ago today when I started running, if I said to myself, you've ran a 10K, I'd be like, nah, that's not true. And then you go on from a 5K to a 10K to a half marathon. I remember my first ever half marathon. And then it moved on to a full marathon and then an ultra marathon. And now the length of the UK. And it's just gradual increase. But yeah, I suppose that could be used in any aspect of life. It's just gradually increase and just be happy. That's not the question you've asked me. How have I gone from you asking about my legacy to me wittering on about being happy? But that's the beauty of life.
Thank you, Marcus. It's been an absolute delight to talk to you, and thank you for sharing your personal stories.
Thank you so much for having me. Honestly, I love Plymouth. City College Plymouth. Just Devon. Every place around here is beautiful. Everyone's just so happy. And the animals. And the scenery. We absolutely love it. I'm very grateful to be here, and thank you very much for having me. I'm sorry I chewed your ear off for a while. It was nice, though. I enjoyed it.
Skillfully Speaking is supported by Babcock International. Visit babcockinternational.com. Presented by Jackie Grubb. Produced by Paul Philpott. Production support by Lisa Hartwell. Edited and mixed by Martin Burgess-Moon. Video content by Mark Stevenson. Coordinated by Louise Greenleaf. Produced by Fresh Air Studios. Copyright City College Plymouth, all rights reserved.